You are listening to Baseball Zealot Radio. You are listening to Baseball Zealot Radio. I am your host, Thomas Nelshoppen, and I'm from Urbana, Illinois. Let's introduce the rest of the hosts. We have Ted Mowich from Chicago, Illinois. Ted, how are you doing?
Doing good, Tom.
How are things going?
Good, good. Nothing new. Just excited to talk about the winter meetings.
Yeah, and from Urbana, Illinois, we have Sean Lee. Sean, how are you doing?
Hey, Tom. Hey, Ted. How are you doing?
Hello, Sean.
All right, so did you guys get be able to see what was going on with the winter meetings? Did you get a lot of the media coverage of what was happening? There's, aside from the deals and the individual deals, what was your what do you think was one of the main themes of the winter meetings?
I didn't seem too extraordinary to me. I mean, you got a few deals came out of it. It just seemed pretty run of the mill this year.
Ted?
I don't know what you guys thought about it.
Well, two things came to mind on my side of it. I saw where the Dodgers really beefed up their team with a lot of veteran leadership, from Jason Schmidt to Louis Gonzalez to Mike Lieberthal.
Uh-huh.
They seem to be making a big run for it this upcoming year. Also, they re-signed Nomar Garciaparra. And they do have a lot of young players on their team, but I think they're pretty well tooled for major competition in the NL West mm-hmm. this upcoming year. And the White Sox, my team, we were the champs a couple of years ago, and now we seem to be, like, watching our money and, you know, dumping Garcia for a couple of young guys. And it's really tough to see, you know, what direction this team's going in.
From champs to chumps, right, Ted?
Oh,
sorry.
Well, as a Cub fan, you know that topic
right.
Well.
Right. Yeah, right. No, I wouldn't know that well because we have not been champs yet.
Oh, that's true.
Right.
But you know the second part.
Right, right. I felt that overall the winter meetings were relatively quiet, at least toward the beginning. I didn't think that... it wasn't a very busy set of
in terms of trades,
trades
and
deals,
signings.
Yeah,
you're right. Go ahead.
But once they got going, you know, I think they tend to focus toward more pitchers than anything. There were a few deals that involved player positions, position players, but. But boy, I tell you, the deals that were made, they really seemed to focus toward the pitching than anything.
Well, your boys really did a lot. I mean, acquiring Lilly and Marquis, although
they've been doing a lot since the end of the season, it seems like. And as far as I'm concerned, I think that they've been doing everything pretty much right. I can't find too much to complain about. All things considered, we'll see how Lilly turns out. But considering who was available in the pitching department, I don't think he could have, you know, faulted him for going the Lilly route.
Well, to me,
rebuttal coming here.
I thought the Lilly deal was the worst deal so far.
Wow.
$10 million a year for 4 years, based on what is my question?
Uh huh. Right now, when I'm reviewing deals, boy, it's hard to consider the money that's being spent here, because boy, $136 million for Soriano. Okay, Soriano is a top flight player. At the same time, you know, once that deal is made, you know, all the contracts are thrown out the window, because you know, all the other deals from since then have been, you know, the amount of money spent on them has been pretty dang high. $10 million a year for 4 years is way too high. How else? I mean, I don't know if he would have taken anything even lower anyway. I don't know.
Well, the one thing is that he's one game above 500 for his whole career, and that's just because he went two games over 500 last year with the Blue Jays.
Right.
So
he's a pretty constant injury risk.
Right. Well, he's consistent. No, just kidding.
Not the kind of consistency you're looking for, but to put yourself in the shoes of the players, though, I mean, is there any better situation to be in than having your name thrown around
exactly.
the winter meetings?
Right after the CBA from this fall, and the owners are spending money like it's going out of style. No, exactly.
I mean, all you have to be is somebody who pitches with their left hand and
right.
and has done it for at least 2 or 3 years, and
uh-huh.
you're gonna be showing the money.
Sure, yeah, show me the money. did you hear how the Lilly deal went down? This is how it's being pitched to the media, at least. I mean, you can take it for how.
I know that the Yankees made a proposal to him, and the Yankees were involved somewhere, and but no, I didn't hear any more details.
Well, what I'm talking about is how the deal was made. This is what I've heard. The deal was made as Henry was on his way up to in the hospital bed, up to getting the EKG done. They were wheeling him up to the room to get his EKG done. And he was on the phone. That's when they sealed the deal, and like I said, this may be their story that they're pitching to the media and make it sound interesting. But that's what I'm hearing.
Well, wait until Henry has to see him pitch.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
he's having a heart attack now.
Get to him while it's hot quick. But. So I think one of the bigger stories that throughout this week has been the Royals, with Bannister and then later Gilmesh, who got a $55 million contract.
Yeah, I can't believe that.
No, I can't either. I think what the Royals are trying to do is trying to show that they're back in the major leagues, and I think that I kind of understand why they're doing that, but at the same time, why do that with Gilmesh?
Well, Mesh is another guy who's always seems to be hurt,
right?
Year to year after year.
Uh-huh.
He was, and I guess still is, touted as far as somebody who's not reached his full potential yet, and I think the Royals are expecting that to happen.
Sure.
With them.
Sure.
Well, he'll definitely go to the front of their rotation.
Right.
I think picking up Brian Bannister was a steal from the Mets.
They gave up
Burgos, and Burgos is a hard thrower to the Mets, but he's got that potential as well, whereas Bannister had, what, 6-7 real good starts in his rookie year?
Sure.
And a hamstring is really what slowed him down.
Right.
But he's got the genes from Floyd, you know, and he looks like a good pitcher.
I heard a quote from Dayton Moore, from the GM for the Royals, and it was right after he had made the deal to get Bannister, and that the quote was something like, "Bannister, we'll give Bannister a chance to crack the Royals' rotation." And I kind of smiled. I mean, you just trade for Brian Bannister, and you don't think he's going to make the Royals' rotation to what the condition of the Royals' rotation is right now. I would hope he would at least get a shot at the rotation. I don't think we'll have to compete for it.
I think the Royals are on the up move, though.
I do too.
They can't go much further down, and I think in 3 years they're going to be a competitive ball club.
Right. Someone had actually two or three people have made the analogy between the Royals this year and the Detroit Tigers 3 years ago in 2003, and I'm not sure if that's a well-placed analogy, if they're going to be spending $55 million on Yoel Mesh, but you know, it might work.
Well, the Royals have their one pitcher who missed all last year. Greinke, thank you.
Yeah. Is he healthy in the head now?
I haven't heard anything.
Ted might know.
I don't know. He worked out of the pen toward the end of last year, and I know they're thinking that he's going to be a part of the rotation this upcoming year.
Did he make the PGA? I heard a rumor last year that one of the times he decided he was going to try playing professional golf, and that was, but I don't think that was actually a serious try. That was just something that he thought he'd try.
Yeah, I mean, they've got Alex Gordon, and they've got, what's that other kid, that outfielder, is it Butler?
DeJesus?
No, it's some kid in the minors, Butler, I think his name.
Oh, in the minors.
And then they also have Ryan Sheely, who they just picked up.
Right. No, I definitely think they are on the way up. There's no doubt. They can't, like you say, they can't go any further down. They've got the Casas kid, too.
Right. And then they also picked up a kid in the Rule 5, this guy named Joaquin Soria. Huh. From the San Diego Padres. He's a Mexican guy, and he was 8-0 so far in the Winter League in Mexico.
Right.
He's 22 years old. They drafted him out of the Padre organization, and everybody's raving about this kid, saying he's got three major league pitchers, and so we'll have to
see.
I think there was just about that particular guy, Ted. I think he just threw a perfect game down in Mexico.
Oh, did he?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Holy cow.
Good timing.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Good timing. Ted, you mentioned the Garcia trade to the Phils, I think. What's your take on that, being the Sox man?
Well, I don't think it's the last thing that the Sox are going to do before the upcoming season. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they didn't move Mark Burley. I know that they had talked about moving John Garland for Willie Tavares, and that deal kind of evaporated, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised if Burley wasn't swapped, and maybe not this year, maybe even next year, and then they move Gio Gonzalez, who's a lefty that they got back in the deal. He was originally sent to the Phillies from the White Sox in the Aaron Rowan deal.
Okay.
So now the Sox got Gonzalez back, and there's rumors that if the Sox don't get Aaron Rowan back via trade now, that they may just wait till next year and sign him as a free agent next year. So,
sure.
Although center field would be kind of an empty area if we don't get somebody out there this year.
Right. I guess, you know, two things that come to mind when I think about this, the deal. One is that being a not White Sox fan, I don't think this team helps incredibly both teams. I think that Gio Gonzalez, I think, is a prospect, but as they say, I think that, you know, there is no such thing as a, you know, pitching prospect. You know, the pitchers tend to be very delicate, and arms tend to get hurt, and so I don't know how well this is going to help the Sox, but whether or not Garcia works well in Philadelphia, we'll see. I'm not sure. And the second thing, the media has been talking about this trade as a Garcia for Floyd deal. I see this as a as Gio Gonzalez being the main key in the trade on the Philadelphia side. And is that your impression or no?
Floyd is a little further along than Gonzalez at this point. But I think if you looked at it from a prospect level, I would have to say that Gonzalez is a little higher up on the prospect level. This deal also has to be a lot with money. Because, you know, the Sox have to compete, and, you know, they're getting rid of a lot of money here.
Sure.
And maybe they're going to do whatever it is it takes to sign Joe Crede. I know that Boris is his agent, and I know that they're saying, you know, that the Sox don't deal with Boris, but, you know, if they dump enough salary, they'll be able to go to the plate and keep Crede. So it's hard to say.
And I guess if I were a Sox fan, I would like that. I just know there are a lot of Sox fans out there, maybe not you, but I just have heard that a lot of Sox fans are not incredibly happy with this deal.
Well, if we were going to save some salary by dealing a starting pitcher, I was hoping, beyond hope, that it was going to be Javier Vasquez.
Well, I know you're not a big fan of his.
Well, Sean, you follow the Yankees. He was with the Yanks a few years back. What do you think of him with the Yanks?
Well, I like Javier Vasquez. It was a shame that he soured that fast, you know, coming from Montreal. I think he went from Montreal to the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a good pitcher. At least he was then. And, you know, I never was a big fan or have been a big fan of Mel Stottlemyre, who was the Yankees pitching coach. I always thought he tend to ruin pitchers more than build them up, and I think something happened there while he was on the Yankees that he just took a step backwards, and maybe coaching had something to do with it. I don't know for sure, but when he left the Yankees, went to the Diamondbacks, and he recovered a little bit, it's a shame that he hasn't reached that same level that he was at. You know, he was like, he was heading up that curve, you know, to be one of the best pitchers when he was with in Montreal, and the Yankees kind of just derailed that thing right off the tracks, and he just hasn't recovered since.
Well, he's got a real good walks and hits divided by innings pitched, a good whip. And, his stats look pretty good, but if you watch the guy pitch, he's so afraid to challenge guys now. And he's got great stuff, you know, and he ends up falling behind, and it seems about the sixth inning, you know, that guys catch on to knowing his pattern, and he just kind of falls apart. He can't get out of the sixth inning.
While we're on the topic of the Yankees, did I hear Pettit is going back to the Yankees? Is that right, Sean?
I think so. You got 1 year guaranteed and player option for the second year.
Okay.
And from what I heard, that was the key to the deal, is that
the player option?
Houston was not going to talk about more than a year with him.
Okay.
And Yankees threw that second-year option in the package, and I think he jumped all over it.
This has been a year for the Yankees to be, dare I say it, fiscally responsible. And is that how you kind of interpret it, or it's?
They have been pretty conservative. They really have been.
Right. What does that indicate to you? I mean, is that just a change in philosophy, or is it just? Just a coincidence in how things are working out.
This year they're thinking less with their pocketbooks and more with their heads. Getting rid of Sheffield, I thought was good. They're all set to go into spring training next year with six starting pitchers, if you want to count Carl Pavano as one of those six. But which is something they do every year, it seems like now, is they try and line up six starters, go into spring training, and see who bubbles to the top. I think they're in pretty good shape. I think what they're still looking for is a first baseman, a solid first baseman. So we'll see if there still might be work to be done there. We'll see if they do anything.
arguably, though, Andy Pettitte is one of the top pitchers out there. I mean, him and Jason Schmidt are right there neck and neck. It's, you know, and I think they got a lot more bang for their buck than the Dodgers did by signing Schmidt.
Oh, yeah, I think so, too. Yeah. And and speaking of Schmidt, I'm going to give my mad props here to Ted. Last week, Ted said that we were talking about the Cubs and Lily, and Ted said that Schmidt would be a good pickup by the Cubs, but he thought that Schmidt was leaning toward the Dodgers at the time. And I don't know if he had inside information at the time or what, but sure enough, Schmidt did go to the Dodgers. So I don't know who you're talking to, Ted, but you must know something.
Well, at the time, I had heard that he was either going to the Dodgers or that he was going to Seattle.
Seattle, that's right.
And I picked those two teams, but he did end up signing with the Dodgers, which makes a lot more sense. I think it
makes more sense to him. His value, I mean, for if you want to talk about fantasy league type value, really doesn't change.
No.
If you want to talk about. I had heard this on some baseball podcasts in terms of the ballpark. He's still in the same division. All these factors. He pretty much is the same type of pitcher. It's just kind of interesting factors that affect his pitching are pretty much the same. So maybe we'll just see the same type of pitcher that we have continued to see in the past from Schmidt, so we'll see. Before we wrap up the winter meetings and hot stove, Ted, you want to describe the Rule 5 draft?
Yeah, the Rule 5 draft basically is if a player's been a professional ball player for 3 years or 4 years before he's reached the age of 19 and he's not on the 40-man roster, he can be picked by another team. And it works in reverse order, so the worst team record-wise in baseball would get the number one pick all the way down to the last team. Okay. And you'd have to have a spot on your 40-man roster for the player that you end up selecting in the Rule 5. So if you have 40 players on your 40-man roster going into the Rule 5 draft, you cannot draft a Rule 5 player.
Okay.
And so the first player selected this year was by the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, and they selected Ryan Gillespie. He's an outfielder out of Western Michigan. He's in the Cleveland organization, and they ended up selling his rights to the Oakland A's. And everything that I've heard, the A's have been following this kid since he was in college.
Oh, yeah.
And that's one of the reasons that they didn't pursue re-signing Jay Payton, is they feel this double-A kid is ready for the big leagues, and he's all set, everybody's saying, to get a lot of at-bats this year at the major league level. Another player that was selected was that Joaquin Soria, who Sean just indicated just pitched a perfect game?
I guess they said a perfect game.
A perfect game. You can't get much better than that.
Wow.
But he's down in the Mexican League right now doing winter ball. He's 22 years old, and the Kansas City Royals got him out of the San Diego Padre organization. So he's so young that he's the one that he was in the organization for 4 years, and he was signed before he was 19, I'm sure, that he's, you know, so young. But another guy that was selected by the Chicago Cubs. He's an outfielder. He was a former first-round draft choice of the Tampa Bay Devil Rays in 1999, Josh Hamilton.
Right.
And the Cubs ended up trading him over to the Cincinnati Reds. I guess Josh played for the manager of the Reds' brother, Johnny Nairn, in youth baseball.
Okay.
So I guess there's a connection there.
Right.
They're going to give this kid one last shot. He's got a world of talent. He's 25 years old. Alcohol, drugs, a truck accident, you name it, this kid has been through it. And
wow.
We'll have to see if it pans out. But, you know, I was doing some research on the Rule 5, and there have been some real bargains. The biggest example, or one of the biggest recent examples, is Johan Santana. He was selected by the Florida Marlins out of the Houston Astro organization,
right.
And then the Marlins ended up selling his rights to Minnesota. And as a 21-year-old kid, he was in the majors, and he had a 6.49 ERA in 2000.
Holy cow.
A long and windy road has brought him to be the best pitcher in baseball today.
Well, weren't you telling me that before the show that Roberto Clemente
was
a Rule 5 pick?
Yeah, he was originally in the Dodger organization, and I read the most recent biography on Clemente, and they were saying that the Dodgers were trying everything to try and hide this kid, and they would not play him every day. They wouldn't play him when any scouts were in there, when any other team's GMs or whatever. But the Pirates did their homework, and they picked him out anyway. So
wow.
Now the whole purpose behind this Rule 5 draft, and you guys could correct me if I'm wrong, isn't it so that to prevent teams from stockpiling players and,
exactly.
and hiding them in the minors forever?
It seems that way, yeah.
Exactly. Okay. And it's a relatively bargain process. A major league team, if they want a Rule 5 player, they have to pay the team that they're selecting $50,000. And then they have to keep him on the roster for the full year. And if they don't, he has to clear waivers. And if he does clear waivers, then he has to be offered back to the original team for half that price. So that would be $25,000.
Okay. And, of course, you know, $50,000 is, you know, a pittance these days. So.
Yeah, Dan Uggla was a Rule 5 last year.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, he was in the Arizona Diamondback organization and the Florida Marlins. In fact, in winter ball last year, they had Uggla's, I guess the Marlin players and the Astro players played in the same winter ball team.
Okay.
Or not, yeah, the, right. The Diamondbacks and the Marlin players played on the same winter ball team. So they got a chance to see this kid play every day, and they were like, I think we're going to select him in Rule 5.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, just doing a little reading here, and one loophole that might exist, and I'm just looking back at the history of this thing. It says in 1988 there was a guy named Ben Rivera that the Braves that was on the, in the Braves organization. 1988 he went to the Rule 5 draft, and the Braves had the first pick in that draft, picked their own guy. Ben Rivera, which
that's funny.
I guess that's legal. You can do that.
Yeah.
I wonder. Then they have to keep him in the majors or offer him back to themselves for half the price, or how does that work?
I don't know. It hurts my head.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's funny. Okay. I think we're going to take a quick break here. We'll be back in a short while.
Big fella sets, Hatton pitches, the curveball high outside for ball one. So the Dodgers are ahead 8-5. And the crowd well knows that one swing of this bat, this fella's capable of making it a brand new game again. Joe leans in. Outfield deep, round toward left, the infield overshifted. Here's the pitch. Swung on, belted. It's a long one. Deep in the left center. Back for Gianfrido. Back. He makes a one-handed catch against the bullpen. Oh, doctor. He went exactly against the railing in front of the bullpen and reached up with one hand and took a home run away from DiMaggio.
We are back with the Baseball Zealot Radio. Ted, you sent me a videotape of a movie. Wait till next year. About the Cubs.
Yeah, it was an HBO documentary type deal, and I TiVo'd it and put it to video for you.
Yeah, I want to thank you for doing that. That's great. I had a lot of fun watching it. I assume that it was Cub fans who probably put that together, but I tell you, I was watching it, and boy, that's one depressing movie if you're a Cub fan. And basically, to recap, the movie essentially, well, it talks about the history of the Cubs, and but I think it focuses mostly on the failures of the Cubs to make the World Series, and I think it mostly focuses on 1945 and 69, and let's see what else, 2003. I think that for the most part, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the footage. I really enjoyed the. I always enjoy watching, watching old baseball footage, and in some cases, not so old, but boy, I tell you, when I watched it, it was just like, I even like showed my wife the footage of the black cat circling Ron Santo, and because she had never seen that before, and I had spent a long time since I've seen that. But it's very enjoyable to see, but at the same time a little bittersweet, and it just kind of like, stuck a knife in my heart. But no, I really did. You got a chance to see it, I assume, right, Ted?
Yeah, the thing that I liked about it was the generational thing. You know, the fans growing up as Cub fans and handing that generationally down to their kids, and I really felt the camaraderie there. You know, even though the Cubs didn't win, it was a wait till next year, and there was optimism, and Ernie Banks was out there, and getting everybody psyched up for the new year. And I mean, if you look at the history of the Cubs. Granted, they haven't won a championship since 1908, but there have been a lot of World Series appearances over that time, that people may not know about. You know, I mean, there have been some really good teams, and I know what the last time that they were in the World Series was 1945.
Right.
So hopefully another World War doesn't have to happen for them to get in there again.
Yeah, right. Even in my lifetime, they've made the postseason.
Right.
Oh, I even forgot in the 1984 when they made the playoffs. And I was thinking that when I saw this, that I was recounting each year that they covered. Okay, I was in this bar when they didn't make it, and I was at this restaurant at where I saw them not make it, and it was like I said, this it just sort of like stuck a knife in my heart each time, but no, I wouldn't recommend it to any Cub fan. Just make sure that you do need to be steeled for just some disappointment, some bittersweet memories, that kind of thing. But and I did learn a lot too. It did go into some details that I was not familiar with in terms of, the World Series playoff type runs and that kind of thing. That's I do appreciate you doing that, Ted.
Hey Tom, another movie. Did you happen to see This Old Cub, Ron Santo story as well?
Oh, I did get that. This Old Cub actually is about. Ron Santo and the Cubs, the Cubs of his era. So yeah, I did see that. I think that's really, it really touches the heartstrings. It really does, because I should say that it is about the Cubs of his era, but at the same time, it talks about Ron Santo today too, and his fight with diabetes and that kind of thing, and. So yeah, I would definitely recommend This Old Cub.
What was that guy's name that walked across the country to raise money too?
Bill Holden.
Bill Holden, right?
Yeah, he walked from Arizona to Wrigley Field.
Is he featured in both of those movies?
He was actually in Wait Till Next Year, and they showed him. Walking from entering Wrigley Field from the center field wall and walking across the Wrigley Field to where Ron Santo was, and I had never seen that before, so that was very cool.
Had you met him?
I met him when he was walking across the country when it was in the Peoria area. And it was very cool. I mean, just to see him and to shake his hand and to have him talk and he is such a Cub fan.
He'd be an interesting guest in an upcoming.
Oh yeah, he would
guest.
Be actually. Yeah, we should. I should talk to him.
Yeah, that would be neat.
Let's go on. So Jeff Bagwell is retiring. I don't think it's quite official yet. But I think on December 15th, he's going to call a conference and officially retire.
I've always been a Bagwell fan.
Oh,
he was
I know
on
that.
my APA team, you know, and I've always been a Bagwell fan. And most people may not know this, but he and Frank Thomas have the same exact birth date. They were both born May 27th, 1968.
Oh, really?
Huh. And if you look at their career numbers, they're almost identical. I mean, if you take off Frank Thomas's last season that he played when Bagwell was forced not to play because of his injury,
right.
the home runs are just about right on, the doubles, the RBIs. One guy, Bagwell's got a lifetime average of .297. Frank's got one at .305. I mean, really, really very similar ball players, and both... deserving of Hall of Fame, at least consideration. Frank is still going strong, and I'd have to think that he's going to be a no-brainer when it comes time.
Bagwell or
Frank? You know, Bags. It's hard to say. You know, I mean, his season's cut short a couple of years. You know,
I would think he would be Bagwell.
It's hard to say, you know.
He was such a good fielder, in addition to all that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have always heard that. I would think he would, and he was such a bit important part of that team. For such a, I mean, he and Biggio.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he pretty much identified with that team. Both those players.
I like Bagwell too. I'd love to see him. Get in someday, but you know, up against all the other power numbers from his era, we'll see what happens.
Well, he had that one really good year. That one year, I think it was probably the shortened year. I think probably he and Matt Williams both had that. Incredible year. I think Williams is on his way to break the home run record and the same year that Bagwell had this really impossible year. And that's one thing I remember about Bagwell.
Yeah, that was 1994 when he batted. He batted .368.
.368. That's right.
In 110 games.
Right.
Because of a strike.
What would have happened?
He had 39 home runs at that point.
Wow.
So I mean, yeah, that was an incredible year.
Sure.
116 RBIs in 110 games, but you know, you wonder, you know, what the numbers would have translated out to a full season. It's hard to say, you know.
Right.
Keep up that pace, but that was a shame.
Well, on a related note, and this is kind of a sad note on our society. If you do a Google search on Bagwell, what comes up on the first search result is nothing to do with Jeff Bagwell, but his ex-wife Shane Bagwell. I don't know if you know much about her, but she's a an ex-model, maybe you can consider her a model, but she's known for doing these outlandish, racy stunts all around, you know, that. But unfortunately, she's the one who gets all the web hits, and not Jeff Bagwell. I don't know. I find that kind of sad.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. J.T. Snow is also retired. He announced that, I think, yesterday. Another good glove at first base. He didn't have the hitting stats that Bagwell did, but he was a fair of the stick, I think.
Jack Snow's son, the wide receiver, the football player.
Oh, really? I didn't hear that.
Yeah. And he it seems like he learned to hit a little bit better as his career went on.
Right. He was a solid hitter yeah. I think.
300 hitter, right?
He ended up
being a 268 hitter.
For his career.
For his career.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, for his career. But he did hit 300 in 2004.
Okay, yeah.
And he had 2 years where he drove in over 100 runs.
Okay.
And he had two more years where he just missed that, 98 and 96 runs. So, not too shabby.
No. Did you hear about...
Definitely a gold glover at first, though.
Right. Did you hear about Jose Uribe's death? I saw that. I saw it on my ticker on my browser. And I saw Uribe. And I just traded for Juan Uribe in my Apple League. I thought, oh my God. But it turned out it was Jose Uribe from the Giants way back when. And who is, I think, is what we were saying, Ted, his second cousin.
Right. His second cousin. And originally, Jose Uribe came up as Jose Gonzalez. And I guess there was another Jose Gonzalez, and he didn't want to be confused
right.
with another guy. So I believe he took his mother's maiden name, Uribe.
Okay.
And I think that's where, you know, he came up with Jose Uribe.
Yeah, I remember him from the Giants, yeah.
Yeah, he was a slick fielder.
Decent fielder, I remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. Not much of a hitter.
Right.
241 lifetime career hitter. And,
right.
But no. I guess he was running a hardware store down in the Dominican right
okay.
now and got in a car accident and
right.
got killed. So it's been a tough season for the Uribe clan, you know, with Juan with his carjacking episode and
right.
all went on there or run in with the guns or whatever happened with him. And now his second cousin gets killed.
Right.
And I think that he had some kind of... I think Jose Uribe had some kind of ties with Vladimir Guerrero. Because I heard that Guerrero was down there for the funeral procession. And he had music blaring out of his van as the procession was... You know, he was a part of the procession. And so I don't know, you know, much about Dominican funerals. But I believe that Uribe... may have been married to somebody with the last name Guerrero, so I don't know if there's any family ties there or what.
So, Todd, you've got to be feeling pretty happy right now. I know you are. Because the Hawk has been chosen as a nominee for the Fort C. Frick Award. I know how much of a fan you are, Ken Harrelson.
Now, if he gets this award, is he automatically retired and he can go off in the annals of baseball and we don't have to listen to the guy anymore?
Now, wait a minute. You like Ken Harrelson. He's one of your favorite broadcasters. Is that correct?
Oh, my God. You know how to yank a guy's chain, don't you?
Oh, I do.
Oh, my God.
Now,
you know, I've got the MLB package, and I watch games all over the country, and... I can't listen to the White Sox games. I've got to put them on mute.
That's where I was headed too. Is I just got the MLB package this year too, or the first year. And quite honestly, this is the first year where I get a chance to actually compare, you know, broadcasters on a wider level. And you know, I can start making some. You know, comparisons, and oh my God, Ken Harrelson, I can't take the guy. I'll just turn it off and watch the game silently. But no, he has been nominated. I read the press release from the Sox, the White Sox page on MLB, and the reasons they had were. His catchphrases, and which included the ones you really like, you know, put on the board, and his. Now, see, okay, one thing I did not know is he coined Frank Thomas's nickname, the, you know, Big Hurt. I did not know that. You gotta give him credit for that, right?
Yeah, and he—I'm not sure. He may have had something to do with El Caballo as well.
Sure.
Carlos Lee.
Sure.
And.
Or do you think he just like went to the restroom at the ballpark and heard some fan talk about it in the next stall and came back and hey, let's start using this instead, and he gets the credit for it, right?
Don't get me thinking about what goes on in the head of Hawk Harrelson. Could be lost for days.
Oh my God! But anyway, so we gotta give Hawk Harrelson his due, right? I think so. I don't know.
Phil Rizzuto would say, the guy's a huckleberry.
Huckleberry.
There we go. Good.
There we go.
Good, yeah. Sean.
Did you get a chance to see the other nine who were nominated? Tom Cheek, I have no idea who he is. Do you know? Tom Cheek.
Tom Cheek. No.
Dizzy Dean, I can...
Yeah, I found Tom Cheek, 32 years, he covered the Expos and the Blue Jays.
Okay.
They died in 2005.
Well, I'll give him that, just for staying up in Canada. Dizzy Dean, Bill King, Tony Kubek, Francois, I don't know, Denny Matthews, Graham McNee, Dave Niehaus? Okay, and Joe Nuxhall are the other ones that are being nominated. I was in Cooperstown when Harry Carey got the Ford C. Frick Award. We went. First of all, I got to give mad props to my wife. We went to Cooperstown on our honeymoon.
Awesome.
It is awesome. Joan, I love you. I don't know how many other wives would go to the Baseball Hall of Fame. On their honeymoon, so I got to give my wife her due. That's
mine. Would have filed her divorce papers as soon as we got there.
We went when Johnny Bench and Carl Yastrzemski and Red Shane Deese were being inducted, and Harry Carey was getting the Ford C. Frick Award, and so we saw a lot of red caps and a smattering of blue caps for anyone who might have gone out to see Harry Carey get his award. Harry Carey had a great speech, and it's interesting that was right when the Pete Rose scandal was getting all the press. And Bart Giamatti, it was just about a month or two before he died, he gave a speech, and boy, I tell you, he got a lot of flack. They were saying, the Reds fans who were there for Johnny Bench were saying, you know, free Pete Rose, free Pete Rose, you know, but anyway, that's my story of...
The best speech I've ever heard from the Hall of Fame was from Bob Uecker.
Oh, yeah. I've heard about this, I think.
When he won the Frick Award, I think it was 2003. Right. If you could go find a transcript of that speech, even reading the transcript is hilarious. It's unbelievable. Yeah. The guy got up there and read this thing.
I'll post a link on the website. Yeah. If I can find it, I'll post a link on the website. That's definitely worth it.
And if you could get the audio.
Get the audio, even better. Yeah.
Even better.
Right. All right, I think we're going to close the show. Chad, do you have anything you want to say to our faithful listeners?
No, till next time.
Sean?
Enjoyed it very much. We'll see you for the next show, and happy Hanukkah to everybody.
Right, happy Hanukkah. All right, we're going to close up. Again, our email address is feedback@baseballzealotradio.com. Email us if you have anything you want to say. We'll be seeing you later. Bye-bye.